Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks. Sorry for the late start, but this is Ramble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Happy Easter weekend. This is the Tornado Tony Penico.
And happy birthday to Sergey Kovalev.
32 years old today. Yes, he is.
I'm on a minute. We're obviously having a little technical difficulties over here. I know we're supposed to be getting a meeting, but I don't know if that's still a problem. My Skype froze for like 20 minutes when I tried to make the phone call. So hopefully things go well. We'll see. We get a lot to talk about. WWE is on the forefront, of course. Ronda Rousey. You get some big waves.
Yeah. I was Rich, I'm a wrestling guy. I love it. I was at my friend's house watching the pay-per-view last Sunday night, and that was pretty awesome moment. They talked to Rock and he got out of the ring and he walked over to Ronda Rousey and she just gave a look and she got right in there. I was like, dude, I mean, we were going nuts. We went so nuts, and most of the entire show over their house in the condominium. We had the cops called on us. Yeah.
It's been a while since I had the privilege of being invited to a big WrestleMania party. My buddy Ryan in high school used to always watch it, but kind of got out of watching it myself. And, the whole Ronda Rousey thing was, I think, kind of a happy accident, the way it looks. Her manager has already come out and kind of said it's a one-off thing. Ronda put out a tweet saying that she's just getting started with The Rock there, so.
Yeah, that's all right.
There's a lot of differing sentiments out there, and, the whole signing of her contract with the UFC, she just upped her contract just before this happened. Same week that Brock Lesnar goes to back to WWE, she just gets a new contract. So I don't think that's a coincidence. I think they did try to lure her over there to the WWE. And if you looked at the fans on Raw the other night, obviously it resonated more than just on WrestleMania. Okay. They were calling for her during Brock's promo. He was doing, I guess, or whatever the hell he was doing. What was going on there? I saw a picture of him with his face all beat up.
Who, Brock?
Yeah.
Well, he was kicking ass in the main event, and then he made a mistake and he headbutted the post, and he it looked like he may have done a blade job on that.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. But you know what? It made it so much more believable.
So Cain Velasquez wasn't in the arena then.
Tell us
all about WrestleMania, because that was the only moment that I watched in an MMA fan of wrestling.
Overall, it was a really good show. The match, honestly, I was most disappointed in. The ending was good, but for the most part, I was disappointed in the Sting versus Triple H match, because when they started it, it was really like the beginning was slow, like their timing seemed really off. And you're talking about Sting, who just turned 56, and Triple H is about 45. So you're not talking about spring chickens out there. But they just didn't seem to have a chemistry in the beginning. And then they did the run-in interferences, and that's what got everybody really pumped up. First, Triple H's boys, like DX, which was like Billy Gunn and Road Dogg and X-Pac, they all came out and they started jumping Sting. And then all of a sudden, the NWO came out to support Sting. It was Paul, Nash, and Hogan. The place went nuts for that. So then those six are fighting each other. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's like Shawn Michaels appears in the ring and he kicks Sting. And just getting those seven guys involved really picked that match up. I'll probably say the best match on the card overall was Seth Rollins and Randy Orton. Those two guys put on a fantastic show. The ending of that match, it's hard to even describe. My words cannot give it justice. You maybe have to YouTube it or test it on a replay or on demand. You've got to see the end of that match. The Undertaker Bray Wyatt match was entertaining, just because Wyatt plays off that creepiness, and the Undertaker just kind of played right off him. And the main event, like I said, Brock was beating the shit out of Roman Reigns. It was like beating the shit out of him. And then he had buzzed the post, and then they were both kind of down and kind of hurt. Here comes Seth Rollins to cash in his Money in the Bank. He can get a title match anytime he wants. Cashes it in. Brock Lesnar had him up for the F5. Dwayne spears Brock. And then Rollins gets up there with a curb stomp on both of them and gets the pin on Roman Reigns. So then what they did on Monday night was Brock shows up on Raw, and he never wrestles on Raw. I mean, he barely wrestles any pay-per-views. He's like, you know, I want my rematch tonight. And then Rollins was trying to duck him. So he ran away. So then basically Brock kept beating shit out of everybody, you know, kicked the shit out of all the announcers, beat the hell out of the cameraman, and then they suspended him, you know, so they could get him off TV for a while. But as I was talking to my friend tonight at the gym, it made it interesting. It made people say, oh, damn, that was good, and I want to see what happens next. Because my son was missing that for a while. Like I said, I've been a fan my whole life. And there was a part in, like, the 90s where I really started getting away from it because, like, I wasn't interested in the characters as much, and I wasn't interested in the storylines as much. And then that's when they started, like, with that WWF versus WCW, the Monday Night Wars. Then you had the Attitude Era in WWF with Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, DX, Kane, The Undertaker, Mankind. And then in WCW, you had the NWO, you had Ric Flair, the Four Horsemen, Sting, and all those guys. And that made it interesting. And you wanted to watch and see what was happening. And I think when WWE, over the last, say, 10 or so years, monopolized the business, you know, there were times it was like, okay, I'm watching it just out of habit and just so I don't lose the storyline, but I'm not emotionally invested. I'll say Sunday night, we were all emotionally invested in that card.
Well, working on getting the Blog Talk Radio studio up here. It's taking forever for some reason. But we'll get Tom on eventually to talk about this a little bit at some point. But I did want to point out, I got an article over at sportsrants.com about the whole Rousey fiasco. I really think this is a big deal for her. It really shows that she's bigger than the UFC, because we know from the experience of a lot of past stories we've talked about here. Probably the most frequent one that I'm called my attention. I basically started thinking of this right away when I saw that Rousey appeared there at WrestleMania was Anderson Silva wanting to fight Roy Jones Jr. Speaking of which, Roy got a knockout over the last week.
Yeah.
But anyway, Anderson Silva wanted to fight Roy Jones Jr. Then Chris Lytle was talked about fighting Roy Jones Jr. A couple different fighters from the UFC. They wanted to do an MMA versus boxing guy. We've got another boxing guy going over the MMA circles we'll talk about later. But they wouldn't let Anderson Silva do it. Chris Lytle didn't end up doing it even after he was retired from MMA and the UFC. But, you know, they talked about it. And, you know, one of the things that was mentioned in that whole process was the UFC's contracts. And I think Ronda Rousey, when she re-upped her contract, had to have had something written in to where she could pursue stuff like this. But at the same time, I think the UFC is really scared that she could be snatched away. You know, because who else are they going to really throw at her other than Cyborg, number one? And look what happened to Gina Carano. Right to Hollywood and never looked back. So,
yeah. Lots
of concerns there on their part that she could step in there and not only wow the audience that night, but have the audience calling for her back on Monday night, chanting her name. I mean, come on. Dana White's got to be shitting bricks at this point. After what the WWE did to him last week, You know, I think Vince is a little pissed off. I mean, I don't think this is a happy, healthy relationship going on here. I think Vince is legitimately pissed that Dana and the Fertittas tried to throw so much money at Brock to get him away from the WWE.
Right.
And it's just, there's so many implications to where this could go, how it could turn out. The bottom line I came up with in my thesis is that the UFC needs to humble itself a little bit here and start thinking about where it needs to realize that the WWE could be a big help if they learn to work with them constructively instead of being forced to back into a corner. Where could it go if they actually were like, hey, you know, let's have a conference call between Dana and Vince and announce a big new collaboration here. What could happen then? You know, the possibilities are endless. That's my point. But Rousey's management says, hey, this is one thing. That's it. I did see one legitimate report that she might come back for 32, WrestleMania next year. This would be a one-time-a-year thing, but the fans already calling for her back legitimately like that. That's it's a pretty big deal, and I think that she could take all those other girls, the four horsewomen they call them.
Right.
And they could do some legitimate shit in the WWE. And those girls really aren't doing that great in the UFC. I mean, they're not making a ton of money. So, and Shayna Baszler, one of them, she should retire from MMA based on her last performance.
Let me throw this out at you, and I want your opinion, because you know, I really don't watch UFC. I really don't follow with that much. The only time I really was watching it about 5 or 6 years ago when Brock was fighting in the UFC. Like, if he was fighting, I might go to my friend's house for a pay per view. I don't know. I mean, is the interest in the sport starting to cool off? Because I don't see as much on there like I used to. I mean, you would see, I mean, every channel for a while was doing something in cage fighting. I'm going to admit, not that I look hard for it, but I don't hear about it as much. And I'm just trying to wonder if it's like, it's maybe just cooling off a little bit. And you just tell me if I'm wrong.
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, for a while they were using terms like the meteoric rise of MMA and the fastest growing sport in the world. There's definitely some growing pains that they're experiencing. You know, especially when you have a company like WWE that could come in there and smack them around like this.
Right.
Dana wipes out there saying, hey, we want to be the NFL. Of combat sports, you know, but there's a lot of work to do to get there, and everybody says the guy works really hard, but he is so stuck up, and we can do everything by ourselves, and we'll take our ball and go home with it, that he really has neglected to make friends with people like the WWE, rather than, you know, try to poach their people and think that if there's going to be no consequences. And then to lose Tampa, I think that was like, oh, shit, you know, we have to step up and figure out how we're going to deal with this big...
And I'll tell you this. This is something that I remember from about 5 years ago when UFC was really, you know, getting a stronghold. And here's another thing that I noticed, and I'll bring this up from a couple weeks ago. When I was down in Florida. Usually there's an MMA pay-per-view so often, or UFC pay-per-view, I should say, so often. And a couple of years that I would go there, the one bar that I would frequent, they would get the UFC pay-per-view. And I'm pretty sure they got it a couple weeks ago. I really don't remember. But I remember a couple times going to the bar, say, around 7 o'clock, sitting at the table. And then by 10 o'clock, you know, when the card's about to start, you could see that they were actually asking me if I would, you know, move up to the bar. Now, They didn't do that this year. They didn't ask me if I wanted to, you know, abandon my table because back then it was like you'd have so many people start coming into that bar around 10 o'clock to watch fights 10, 11 o'clock. And I don't remember a crowd like that being there this year a couple weeks ago. I don't remember who was fighting. I didn't stay for it. But because I actually went back to my hotel, I was going to watch the boxing matches. But about 5 or so years ago, right before Floyd Mayweather came out of retirement and he was going to fight Juan Manuel Marquez. And I remember being on a conference call. You had invited me on because I was unemployed at the time. And then whenever you invited me on a conference call, I was always signing into them, you know, trying to get a question in. One of them was with Dana White. And he was blasting, I mean, absolutely blasting, you know, because there was a boxing event. And I don't think there was the same night Marquez and Mayweather against the UFC event, but they were within the same week. So it was almost like, which if you could only pick one, which one are you going to spend your money on? And I remember Dana White, and I'll never forget his quote. You got Mayweather out there. It's going to be like a Dancing with the Stars. You ain't going to get no entertainment out of that. He's just going to run and dance. It's going to be like a competition of how much he can dance and dance with the stars and all that, because he was on Dancing with the Stars. Why don't you order my pay-per-view and you'll get 7 great fights instead of just one Dancing with the Stars fight? And I'm sitting there thinking, hey, moron, the boxing pay-per-view is going to have 3 to 4 fights on it. It's not just the Mayweather fight. And just by chance, whoever fought in that vicinity of Mayweather and Marquez, now Mayweather and Marquez was not a great fight. You know, Mayweather won pretty handily, but it was somewhat entertaining. The pay-per-view, the UFC pay-per-view card was a dud. It was either boring decisions or like 30-second knockouts. And the Mayweather fight outdrew it money-wise. But with regards to Dana White with his ego, I mean, first of all, he's blasted in the sport of boxing. First of all, now, I'm not a UFC guy, but I'm also smart enough that if there's a chance to make money, see, Dana wants to monopolize things. So if he has a guy, you know, you're in UFC and that's it. You know, you're not just a cage fighter, you're in his brand. So you have 6 fighters that he's kicked out of his brand because they lost a few fights. That would be like saying, oh, HBO, yeah, let's drop Arturo Gatti because he lost 3 straight fights back in 1998. Then he goes, he's fighting Mickey Ward, but we don't care because he lost 3 straight fights. So we're not even going to cover those fights. You're smart, right?
Yeah.
Two of the fights of the year. And it was a trilogy that became historic. Dana gets onto his own ego. Now, if I'm a smart businessman, I'm like, you know what, I wouldn't mind like a cross promotion. You make money, we make money. Floyd Mayweather against somebody who's like their 147-pound champion. And, you know, if they don't want to agree, maybe have your guy let him do it in the boxing rules. I mean, but then you got to be afraid your guy might get smoked because he's fighting out of his element. But you make a lot of money in doing it. He'll make a lot more than he's making. You get a lot of these great pay-per-view cards, you're saying, okay, that guy made $200,000. That's good money. But you get a boxing pay-per-view, and I'm not even going to talk about this crazy money that these guys are making in a few months. Just talk Mayweather and Canelo Alvarez. We're both pocketing over $10 million as opposed to $300,000. What would you rather do? Come on, seriously.
Well, here's another slant on it. You know who Tyson Fury is, besides being a guy with the best fighting name in history, I think.
That's a great name.
He is a heavyweight boxer, and he's more famous, I think, in the UK than the United States. But
he's an English guy.
He's talked about fighting Cain Velasquez in the UFC, and he's kind of downplayed the skills of an MMA fighter and said, you know, if I get to him, I'm going to knock him out. It's not going to get to the ground. We're not going to do any wrestling, stuff like that. And so apparently he's actually had conversations with Dana White about going into the UFC. And once again, here's the victim of, you know, not thinking of the possibilities. Dana White has lost his chance, it sounds like, now, because now, after his YouTube YouTube videos about this, making this leap, went viral. Now he's in serious talks, quotations here in this article, serious talks with Bellator. And it just turns out that Spike TV is about to enter the United Kingdom for the first time. Apparently they didn't have it before. So it's a big deal. Spike TV, obviously, Bellator, two big brands, and if they're going to be able to reach his fans over there in the UK, sounds like a done deal. And it's actually linked, Spike TV is linked to the United Kingdom's Channel 5. It'll launch in the UK on April 15th, according to BBC News. So if Tyson Fury goes on a mixed martial arts tear, UFC and Dana White are going to be pretty pissed off that they missed their opportunity. Because basically what it came down to, I guess, was money. Fury wanted more money than Dana White was willing to offer.
Here's the problem. Like we were saying in the video, even when UFC was hitting its heyday and they were doing these pay-per-views, they were making all these crazy, they were getting these crazy buy rates. They were getting very successful buy rates, but the fact was they were doing so many pay-per-views. They were doing pay-per-views like every 2 weeks. You know, so it's like the casual fans, like, you know what, I'm not spending, you know, $50 every 2 weeks. It's like $110 a month. I'm not doing that no more. And then you're throwing all these players on there, but if they were making, say, $1 million buys, that's a high number. $1 million buys at $50, okay. So that's what? How many million is that? 50, and $1 million buys, that's what? $50 million. Okay, where's that money going to go? And, okay, the cable company's going to get some of that too. Okay, you're going to get your ticket sales. And you have 14 fighters on the card, so there's 7 fights televised. Then say, just say there's 3 non-televised fights. So you got 20 fighters total. And they're only making a fraction of that money. They're just pocketing it. You know, a promoter's got to make money. You know, we all know Don King ripped his fighters off. We know Bob Arum ripped his fighters off. But the thing is, at least with Don King, it's like, if Mike Tyson was signed for $30 million, you know, he might not get all that $30 million, but at least his contract says $30 million. It's not like, hey, Mike, Dana White, let's put it this way. He, in his mind, he was his own attraction. He was the number one attraction, not his fighters.
Yep, the most recognizable figure in mixed martial arts, according to one former guest. Pretty interesting commentary from a former UFC fighter. But anyway, yeah, it's a big deal. That and one of the things that Tyson Fury said that kind of struck a nerve this week was that, you know, it's, it kind of says something about the quality of competition when, you know, a guy like Brock from Fake Fighting could even come in and win your heavyweight championship. So that makes him think he could do it, even though it's a totally different heavyweight picture right now. He still thinks he can beat Cain Velasquez. Who is mostly a on-his-feet fighter. You know, he does have all-around skills, but he primarily likes to take people out on his feet, throwing punches. So who knows? You know, this could be an interesting matchup, but it seems like it's unfortunate, but it seems like Bellator is the company that's willing to do anything right now for ratings, for market share, or whatever, you know, eyes on the content and butts in seats. They're going to do anything they have to do to ramp it up. So it's amazing to me, though, that they're just setting up so many of these type freak show type fights, and they're working. That's the best part for them. They're working. Tito Ortiz versus Stephen Bonner. What's up? Disgusting, ugly, horrible fight, in my opinion, but everybody loved it. Kimbo versus Shamrock will probably be a sloppy, disgusting, ugly fight, but people will love it. So, this one, if they get one of their big heavyweights against Tyson Fury, I think people will like that too. We'll see. We'll see if that can sustain them over the long haul. I don't know. But Tyson Fury, yeah, he's in serious talks with Bellator. And he still wants a shot at Brock Lesnar, according to ESPN. He says, stand up and fight with MMA gloves or without. And he called Brock unskilled in the art of wrestling or jiu-jitsu. So we'll see. And he's 24-0 in boxing. So obviously he's pretty dangerous there. 6'9".
Cunningham had him down, but he just basically just leaned on him and just, you know, just crushed Cunningham. Cunningham is 205 pounds. This guy's at 270. He just kind of just mauled him. So Cunningham had nothing left, and finally went down and out.
And I know Bellator has plenty of kind of pushover guys to kind of set him up for a title shot or something, but... you know, I think he could really do wonders in mixed martial arts with a little bit of training. Anyway. An unfortunate death in mixed martial arts over the weekend. Oh, here we go, finally. Tom's microphone is live now.
All right. Hey, I just have to chime in on this whole Tyson Fury stuff. I mean, first off, for him to compare himself with Brock Lesnar, maybe he's overlooking Brock Lesnar's background before he even signed with the WWE. I mean, Brock Lesnar was an All-American Division I wrestler. Brock Lesnar was built for this kind of stuff. Brock Lesnar had a background in it, and I think for Tyson to think, well, Lesnar could just come in from fake fighting, no, he didn't. I mean, you look at his wrestling background. Now, granted, he didn't have a lot of MMA experience and made a pretty quick move on things, for sure. But if Tyson Fury thinks it's going to be that easy, I think he's got a lot of thinking coming, because I still have that image of him flat on his rear end from Steve Cunningham, you know, our former guest, who, as Tony was just saying a few minutes ago, weighing in at 205 pounds. I mean, talk about David against Goliath. And now, I'm not saying Tyson couldn't succeed if he'd really start working at it, but, you know, we were talking about earlier how Dana White was so, his ego was so big. And I'll tell you, I've been around a long time, and I've seen a lot of ego problems with people, and it's been a downfall for a lot of people. And, you know, I don't see the, like you were saying, why can't Dana do something with Vince McMahon except have his people stolen away from him and sit up nights worrying about it? I mean, a little bit of cooperation would go a long way. But it's the same thing with Tyson. If his ego is so big that he doesn't even feel he needs to train much, he can just come in and stand there and knock people out. Well, that's been tried before. It's going to be fun to watch, for sure, but I just think his ego's out of control. And furthermore, I would question why he's coming to Bellator, because he's having such success in the heavyweight division. He's probably just a few fights away from a title shot, I would think. I mean, we're running out of bodies.
Vladimir.
Yeah, well, Vladimir's running out of bodies, and tell me that wouldn't be a great fight for England, for Vladimir to defend his title against Tyson. If they're fighting, I'm watching, for sure. So I would think that Tyson Fury, I mean, if I'm in his brain trust, I would say, stay where you're at and make more money at boxing, because, Tony, you were right on the money as far as when you start comparing this whole thing, you know, for Dana White to say what he was saying. Well, you look at the money of a Floyd Mayweather fight. Now, granted, you know, maybe it wasn't the most exciting fight, but you've got the undercard there, and boxing still pulls in more money. That's the bottom line. That's where we're at right now. And I just wish that Dana could get off his high horse and start looking at these other things and start to learn something from it. Anyways,
I'm going to ask you guys a question, just because, once again, this is going to come to my UFC inexperience. When they do a lot of these pay-per-view cards that they put on every few weeks or whatever, and like I said, I think they're flooding the market too much, honestly. I think every week you're hearing, like, another one, another one, another one. It's like, it almost like it gets to the fact you become immune to it. It's like, I'm not going to get this one, or I'm not going to get this one. I'll wait for this one. Well, boxing is starting to make the right move. It's starting to limit its pay-per-view numbers, and the pay-per-view cards that it's doing are bringing in bigger numbers, you know? But when they have like a UFC pay-per-view, where do they hold those at? Like, where would they, what arena would they have that at?
What do you mean, like what stadium? Well, they have pay-per-views all over the world. But actually, most of the time they do overseas cards, they will have it on their Fight Pass thing, which is like a computer pay-per-view type thing, or a smartphone.
Yeah.
But most of the time their pay-per-views are in Vegas or Brazil, places like that.
And like I said, once again, I'm answering this honestly because it's part of my inexperience. So like I said, I don't watch, you know, a whole lot of them. Like I said, I only ever really went over my friend's house for a couple of ones about 5 years ago when Lesnar was fighting, and he was you know, heavyweight champ. I don't know if, like I said, I was just saying, like, you know, you get, like, last year I went to that Pacquiao fight in Las Vegas. And that place was, I mean, the MGM Grand was jam-packed. Packed. And, you know, and it was, I mean, I don't know if maybe it's because of the cage and it's harder to see as opposed to a boxing ring because you're basically surrounded by a cage. I don't know. I don't know what their live gate numbers are there. Is that Pacquiao fight that I went to last year? Packed. That fight with Mayweather is going to be, it's going to be the point where it's like you're going to have people like back in when Ali fought Frazier the first time. You're going to have some big celebrities, guys like Frank Sinatra, working as a photographer just to be able to get in the door. It's going to be like that. And like I said, I wasn't sure about like the live date on a lot of these cards, if they were, you know, as rocking as what I saw. I mean, I went to Atlantic City, Dottie Ward, Miguel Cotto, and Alfonso Gomez. Not a super fight. It was an HBO fight, but that place was packed and it was rocking and rolling. You had the Mexican Puerto Rican rivalry. So I mean, I'm just trying to just wrap my mind around, you know, the money that they bring in as opposed to the money that the fighters make, and why is there such a disconnect.
All right, well, I'll give you my 2 cents worth on it. Boxing still has events. Mayweather and Pacquiao is not just a fight. It's an event.
Right.
And it's going to be a mainstream event that people are going to be talking about around the, I call it water cooler talk.
Yeah.
And with the UFC, it's kind of teased at that, but a lot of it was like with Brock Lesnar when he came over from the WWE. So in that sense, I mean, and I don't know about the gates and the money and all that stuff because the UFC is a private organization and they don't really release a lot, but to my knowledge, Rich would probably know more about that than I would. But I would still say until the UFC gets to that event stage where they're actually having an event. I mean, and I'm not talking about like UFC 1. Back then it was more of a spectacle. But right now, it just seems like we haven't had events like that. And for Dana White to say something like he said about, well, Mayweather's going to dance all night, and if you watch my pay-per-view, we'll have 7 exciting fights. Well, we could have 7 lay-in prays, and, okay, maybe Mayweather is not the most exciting guy, but the undercard could have 3 or 4 blood-and-guts stand-up brawls. And when boxing works good, I'm just giving you my opinion, and I think it's a little more exciting when it works good, because what we like to see in MMA is even the fans like to see stand-ups. Now, if someone's working the ground and they're active in their submissions, that's great. But a lot of people still don't understand the groundwork, and they understand when two guys are standing up and duking it out, and there you go.
Right.
Yeah, and I think the UFC right now they're having a lot of identity crisis issues with this whole adjustment of the Reebok situation coming in July, the random drug testing, a lot of heat being put on him for fighters testing positive. George St. Pierre saying he's not going to come back until this whole situation is resolved and everything's in place. So you're having a lot of tough developments for this company, and you know, he just had another fight that got canceled or postponed. Raynan Burrell versus T.J. Dillashaw. So now, on top of injuries, you're going to have drug failures. You're going to have people that are going to want to look to other pastures because of the Reebok deal. You're going to have a lot of major situations, especially the class action lawsuits, too. Another person just joined those the other day. The UFC had to drop. They got their lawsuit thrown out in New York, so they're going to have to wait on the legislature to save them there.
Right.
A lot of bad things happening in a row to start off this year for the UFC.
Okay, and I'll also say this much, too, that who is the big star that people have to see in the UFC? I mean, we look at boxing. Yeah, Floyd Mayweather, love him or hate him, but people are going to watch him. And a lot of people just have to watch his fights. Now, I'm looking at the heavyweight division. No disrespect to Cain Velasquez, but he doesn't have that personality that has a crossover appeal. He just doesn't. And then we look at the light heavyweight division. Well, John Jones isn't winning any popularity contest. And Chris Weidman, a lot of people don't know who he is. Now, GSP had that potential, even though he was from Canada and spoke with an accent, but he's gone. And as we keep, you see where I'm going with this, as we keep going down, now they're trying to promote Conor, but with that behavior that he pulled with Aldo in that belt, I'm kind of just having a little trouble processing that. I mean, maybe that's the style nowadays, but to me, that's just, that's like going up, you know, to one of the biker bars here in my neighborhood, and if there's some patch holders and they're going up and touching their bike, that's a no-no. Don't do that. Well, that's like touching the champ's belt. You haven't won that yet.
It's getting to Aldo, though. I haven't seen all the embedded episodes, but I got a couple comments on that, too. But Aldo is definitely getting pissed off. He said it right after one of the press conference face-offs there. I'm mad. I want to go right through this guy now. So it's getting him pissed off. One of the other things about these embedded episodes, I couldn't help but notice, these are like marketing commercials for Red Rock Resort, aren't they? You know, like, hey, rich people, we're going to take care of you here. You got, you know, beautiful rooms they give to these fighters. You got tailoring services, you know, you got a toilet that raises its own seat. It's unbelievable stuff that they're showing off here at this beautiful Red Rock Casino. And of course, the Fertittas own Red Rock Casino, so...
Well, what a coincidence! I'm shocked. Well, now here's another thing too. Though we do have two foreign-born guys. Now one of them doesn't speak English, and the other one speaks English with a very funny accent. And that's no one's fault. I mean, I'll sure be watching, but I'm talking about crossover appeal of a Brock Lesnar. Or in the boxing world with some of the superstars that we've had there. Back in the 80s, everyone knew who Sugar Ray Leonard was. Everyone knew who Roberto Duran was. I mean, Larry Holmes and Jerry Cooney was, everyone was involved in it. And even going back further in the 60s, I remember when President Kennedy called Floyd Patterson and told him, you got to beat Sonny Liston. Well, I just can't imagine the president now calling... Well, who would he call? Who would he call? John Jones and tell him to beat who? I can't. I just can't imagine it. So I don't know. We just don't have that. And I think until that happens, the UFC is just not going to be able to overtake boxing. Which to me, I really don't care. I like them both. I mean, it's a win-win for me, regardless. And I think that's one thing that's unique about our show is we cover it all. But for Dana to say it's the fastest growing sport and we're just going blow boxing out of the water, well, we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I mean, they are definitely growing. They're getting bigger. You know, obviously, every time there's a new story about the net worth of the UFC, the figure keeps getting bigger. You know, I've heard Dana call it as much as $2.5 billion, the price tag, but they're never going to sell it. And at the same time, they've stalled themselves, I think, in a lot of ways from getting as big as the WWE has gotten. Obviously, the WWE has spent more time at it, but you know they just had WrestleMania in front of 77,000 people in a football stadium. outdoors. I mean, I don't even think the UFC could sell out Cowboy Stadium.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, like Tony was saying earlier, you know, you got the whole ongoing drama, and you've got the personalities, and I don't know, the UFC doesn't seem to have that formula. I mean, I love the technique of the sport. I mean, that's, I live, eat, and breathe that stuff. But for the average person, it's just not there. I mean, they just don't, they need that, you know, as Tony was saying, they need that show, the drama, identify with the characters and see how this is going to play out, you know.
Here's something that bothers me, and this just bothers me from an ego standpoint. Okay, so say back in the day, and I'm going to go right now boxing. Don King signs Mike Tyson, and Mike Tyson's bringing him a lot of money. Tyson's knocking everybody out. And say Don King, Mike Tyson then loses, you know, to Buster Douglas. He gets knocked out. Don King now takes over Douglas, and he basically just says, okay, Tyson, you're done. I want nothing to do with you anymore. I'm basically letting you out of your contract. Well, in the UFC, Mike Tyson's now out of the UFC. You know, because Dana White controls the UFC. So now if Tyson wants to fight, he's not going to be on that big stage anymore. He's going to be, you know, maybe he'll sign with another organization that does mixed martial arts fights, but obviously they're not getting the big pay-per-view numbers, and he might not get the TV exposure or get the, you know, the publicity or the exposure. That's the word I'm looking for, the exposure that he had when he was with Don King.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and how many times have we said it earlier? You know, they have a couple fighters that, you know, get beat in the UFC, and Dana was like, all right, you lost three fights, your contract is done, you're out of the UFC. Well, in the boxing world, a guy like Arturo Gatti lost three fights in 98, 99-ish. And that's
right.
A couple of years before he had the trilogy with Mickey Wharton. He revitalized his career, made pay-per-views with Floyd Mayweather. You know, he won another world title. You know, he ended up making a lot more money. Now, just say, for example, you know, Mike Tyson, you know, he loses his fight to Buster Douglas, and Don King, you're out of the UFC. It's like, in the boxing world, say he loses that fight to Douglas, and Don King goes, oh, Jesus Christ, my meal ticket just lost a big fight. I'm severing this guy. Well, Bob Arum steps in. Oh, Mike Tyson, you're free? I'll sign you. And he's still fighting, basically, because boxing, I mean, you have sanctioning bodies and all that, but Mike Tyson can still be a contender for that same world title that he lost to Buster Douglas, where in the UFC he wouldn't be.
Right, and I remember when Duran was on his losing streak, and when he had that horrible upset, probably the lowest point of his career back in '82 when he lost a decision to Kirkland Lang. Boy, there's some trivia.
Yeah,
and Don King made him wait in the office for whatever small check he was getting, but then Bob Arum picked him up, and Duran had some great days. Now, on the bright side for the UFC, I do sense a bit of a change. Now, you know, you're aware, Rich, that Gray Maynard is on this card Saturday. Okay, now there's a great story on him in there. And, you know, I mean, I know the guy. I've talked to him. I mean, I'm pulling for him, so I'll try to be unbiased about the whole thing. But here's a guy that's been on not just a three-fight losing streak, but losing three fights in brutal, brutal knockout fashion, where a lot of people are clamoring for his retirement. He's 35, and he hasn't just been decisioned. I mean, he's been destroyed. But there were some extenuating circumstances, and I'm grateful that they're giving him another chance. And you remember with Dan Hardy. Now, Dan Hardy was on a losing streak, and yet they kept him around. So some of these guys, maybe that culture is starting to change, this three and out, but if they're competitive fights, if there's other reasons, or if someone's got the personality and they're making it exciting and they're putting fans in the seats, maybe that whole thing's going to be reappraised. Because you're right, Tony, it's a terrible situation. I mean, like you said, you look at Ward and Gatti, and you look at how many losses they have between the two of them, and yet 30 years from now, people will be talking about them, and people may look at Mayweather's undefeated record, assuming he retires undefeated, but no one will be saying, man, you remember that Mayweather-Alvarez fight? God, I got to watch that again. No, I don't think so.
Well,
I mean, maybe some people.
Look at a guy like Rumble Johnson. Rumble Johnson got thrown out of the UFC, and now he's fighting for the title.
Well, I know the way the system works from Forrest's experience that after three fights, you know, if regardless, Dana will just cut him loose and say, look, you need to go back to the smaller shows and string together some wins and we'll bring you back. But still, I think there should be some exceptions to that rule, because when you're back at the smaller shows, you're probably not going to make the money. And if you have to have a day job and you're competing against guys that are training full time, it's very tough.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, unfortunately, we got to move on from this whole subject. We got so much other stuff to talk about. We do have one big piece of bad news to cover. There was a death in mixed martial arts once again, and once again it was kind of an unsanctioned foreign show. So maybe not so much to raise an eyebrow about, but it's a serious incident. I think it's another one of those tournament situations. The guy's name, Rahman Zainalov, 27-year-old Azerbaijan fighter, suffered a devastating blow to the head that led to his collapse on the canvas, and doctors were unable to revive him and quickly pronounced him dead. The cause of death later deemed a brain hemorrhage. The deceased fighter's father actually said that he didn't even give his son permission to compete in the event, as he did not believe in the sport. He said, my son competed without my permission. We were against it. I did not give him permission. He did not listen. And as a result, death. I mean, oh my God. Talk about the worst thing your father could say in the paper about you when you die.
Right. Well, here's my question on that. Now, just last week, the week before, you know, consistently we've covered that topic about deaths in boxing. And again, Tony, as you pointed out, it's the lighter weight divisions, and it's very seldom a one-punch situation. It's one of those beatdowns over, you know, 9, 10, 11 rounds where the guy that eventually dies is fighting back just enough that they can't stop the fight, and it's the cumulative effect. Now, in this case, was it the first round, Rich? Do you know?
I don't know, but he was experienced. It's not like he was just coming out of the crowd. He had a black belt in Taekwondo. He had, silver medal in national kickboxing event and experience in Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. He was, have 11 medals in, different martial arts.
My question is, was it just he was doing okay and then got hit once? And I mean, that's very unusual. What weight division was this?
I don't know. There's not a lot of specifics here.
This is very strange. That's very strange, and it's very alarming. That's not like what we normally see in boxing, for sure. So we've discussed that issue pretty good.
Right. Yeah. So basically, they found out about it by accident, the family. They said they tried to dissuade him. Told him he had a family, but he didn't listen. He just needed the money. And they call it fighting without rules. So I don't know if it was traditional MMA at all. It could have been a totally unsanctioned show. They just used MMA techniques. But, information.
Where did this happen?
Azerbaijan.
Okay. I wonder how many American high school seniors could find that on a map. That stuck in my head. Now, I read a horrible survey that 53% of them couldn't find Iraq, and, you know, 63% had no idea where Afghanistan was, so I'm wondering about this one now. Totally irrelevant. I take that question back.
Man, it's one thing to have your father, like, all throughout your life never say he's proud of you. You know, he quoted in the paper after you die saying, oh, well, he did it when he wasn't supposed to, and hey, he died. That's life, you know.
Wow.
Hey, shouldn't have done it in the first place, buddy. That's what you get.
Yeah.
Death. That's a pretty horrible story. Get a kid.
Yeah, it is. I'd like to find out more about that, because if we're starting to see stuff like that, then it gets into the issue of the gloves and everything else. I mean, a one punch death is just exceedingly rare, unless there was a pre-existing condition. You know, who knows? Maybe we'll never know now.
I think it says a lot about mixed martial arts, though, that these kind of things are usually freak accidents at these type of events. That, like his family said, there are no rules, rather than set up properly under proper supervision with medical personnel right on scene, and all the protections that you put in place for like a UFC event. It seems like all these things happen. All these deaths in mixed martial arts that are at least recorded are situations where somebody screwed up badly. Even that kickboxing death from Milwaukee there, a lot of people had to screw up badly for him to end up in that position.
Yeah, and then you also have to look at matching, because the death that happened in my experience, place where I had most of my fights in California, it was a mismatch. I mean, the guy was very inexperienced up against a more experienced, almost beginning level pro. So, again, all
that's
these questions we just don't know.
On this show, are 99% usually in foreign countries, right?
Yeah, we don't know.
Trying to make it safer here in the United States, I think. But even here, there's deaths, so you don't know. Anyway. We're talking about pay-per-view boxing a little bit earlier. Well, get ready for more free boxing. Not only is the Demon in on this, we're getting True TV getting in the mix with Bob Arum and HBO, Top Rank. Nights in May, they're going to try to replace ESPN Friday Night Fights. Start at 10 p.m. on May 1st. Night before Mayweather versus Pacquiao, and the main event will be Takahiro Ao versus Ray Beltran, the main event lightweight world championship. And undefeated fighters Mikhail Zuski and Konstantin Ponomarev will fight for the NABF welterweight championship as well. Zuski is 26-0, and Ponomarev is 27-0.
Now this is going to be on Spike?
No, it's on True TV.
True TV.
Yes.
Huh. I guess they don't want anyone watching it then.
Huh. Well, actually,
brilliant. Absolute brilliant marketing there. Brilliant.
When I lived in Las Vegas, I used to watch that station all the time because they had like all the reality shows, like the Repo shows and Practical Joker shows and those lists of, the 20 dumbest criminals or something, and they have video clips of people, and they got people like Sylvester Stallone's brother narrating.
Yeah, love that show.
Yeah, stuff like that. That's, if you got nothing else to watch, you're going to watch it. So now they're moving to different markets. And actually, we just got it added on our digital cable here in New Hampshire, True TV. So I started watching it again here. So I'm looking forward to it. I will watch it. But it definitely seems like this is a response to Al Haymon. Like this is the same type of deal as UFC and WWE. If the guy didn't do it, they wouldn't do it. They definitely got big plans here for all their different fighters, and they're going to be working with HBO here. So, should be pretty promising, whatever they. And something here about Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin.
What?
What's going on there?
I'll believe that one is signed.
It doesn't say they're going to fight each other, but...
Okay. On the same card. Okay.
Putting the cards on Friday nights also helps feed off of ESPN. It's Friday Night Fights franchise coming to an end. Their contract with Premier Boxing Champions will begin in the summer.
Well, it would be nice if we could get Triple G and Kovalev on off pay-per-view, so more people could get to know them and be familiar with them. I mean, to me, that's what is so important. When you can get excited about fighters and you can't miss them, they've got an exciting style, you can connect with them. And if it's pay-per-view, it just shuts the audience down so much.
Well, we got some more free fights coming up this weekend, and I did see an article that mentioned that George Foreman was going to be joining the broadcast for CBS, but then I saw the official press release that said nothing about George Foreman, so kind of confused. But we got to get him
as a guest, Rich. I know you've been trying, and you know you were asking about our.
I interviewed his daughter a couple times, and. You know, obviously she talks to him, but I never felt right asking her to get me an interview with her dad. And he's like an impossible. It's easier to get his autograph than it is to get him on the air.
His autograph is not easy.
No, you go to the site and you can buy directly.
I'm talking about, seeing him somewhere and getting an autograph.
Oh, yeah, because he'll direct you to his website. He's got everything is a business to George. He doesn't screw around with that type of stuff. That's why you never hear of him. Oh, yeah, George Foreman on the such and such combat sports show. Doesn't happen. He's on the big networks, if anything. And I think he's always been very business minded, and he's always trying to make a buck off everything he ever does.
Well, I think he learned from his first career. That's pretty important, because from what I understand, he was on some serious financial hard times there in the 80s, and that's what launched his comeback.
Of course, yeah, he didn't have any Al Wiles in his comeback.
Yeah,
he apparently
didn't understand the value of his money, but he sure has turned that around. But, you know, Rich, you ask an interesting question, which I didn't answer you on the email because I haven't had time to consider who our most famous guest has been, and I'm trying to think since I've been on. Antonio Tarver's still pretty, I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think for the past couple of years? Who has been our most famous guest?
I'll say probably our most famous guest, in my opinion, was Roy Jones Jr.
That was a little before my time. Yeah, he'd have to be.
I think so.
And then we had Michael Moore.
I'll break up Michael Moore. I'll tell you some of the big names that I remember being on the show. I've been on the show now for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the Iron Man streak going. Some of the bigger names that we've had on, we had a span. I think it might have been in 2011 or 12. I don't remember. But we had a span of literally 3 weeks in a row. We had representatives from the 88 Olympic teams on there. Ray Mercer, Riddick Bowe, and Roy Jones Jr.
That had to be 2011, because I started in the spring of 2012, and I don't remember any of those guys.
By the way, Tony, you better wish Ray Mercer a happy birthday on Saturday, because he is 54.
Oh, right, Mercer was right, and I bet he still kicks in those places there.
Doc's birthday here, April 3rd, is actually Chael Sonnen. And Stefan Bonner also shares Ray Mercer's birthday. He's also 38. That's a freak show fight for you, Bellator. Stefan Bonner versus Chael Sonnen. You can pull it off.
So I would say on the boxing side, I'd probably say Roy Jones Jr. And I'm just trying to think of some other pretty decent names we've had on. We had on the three that I mentioned, Mercer, and Roy Jones. As Tom mentioned, we had Michael Moore and Antonio Tarver, both former world champions.
Bobby Chez.
Vinny Pazienza, favorite of mine.
Don't forget Bobby Chez.
We definitely have to make a video on YouTube of the Vinny Paz interview. But
that would have been fun.
One that you guys
would have been fun.
Yeah, when I say who it is, probably the most famous, in my opinion, just because we just got finished talking about WWE and how they're bigger than UFC and all that. But
Diamond Dallas Page on. We had Al Bernstein on. We had Richard Steele on. That's really, I mean, obviously Diamond Dallas Page is in the wrestling, business. The other two officials in the boxing business. MMA side, I mean, the guys obviously a lot better than I do. But I
Ken Shamrock.
Ken Shamrock.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, we'll definitely put some stuff together. Ken Shamrock, I think, is last time we had him on was before Blog Talk Radio, I believe.
We had Shamrock on in 2008, because I was still really brand new.
Okay. Yeah, but we had him on a couple times, I'm sure. So.
Right, but I think I was only on with him maybe once, maybe twice. But I know you had him on before I became the co-host.
I definitely have the tape somewhere, whether it's on the computer I'm using now or the other one. I have it, so we'll definitely get it up. We're going to really ramp up the YouTube profile. I was kind of shocked to see the one of the last videos I put up there was like 2 years ago. So I definitely have neglected that site. We're just actually coming up with a million total views there for all my videos. So, it does have some established foundation, but it definitely has some room to grow, and we've got all these other social networks that are kicking ass and the new website. So that would be the icing on the cake, and I got some time because firewood season is over. So we're going to start taking a lot of these interviews and making something happen with them. And the other good thing about that is YouTube's all connected up to AdSense. My AdSense ads doing shitty on every website I have them on, but when they're automatically posted up there, the YouTube video, you make a lot more money. So hopefully we'll get a lot of listens and views of these videos. We'll try to get some good pictures of these people. We're going to start with John Scully. I'm going to be doing his tonight and tomorrow. So by the weekend, that'll be up. So happy Easter. He's got some pictures. That was one of the main reasons. Not only is he entertaining in his interviews, but he's got some pictures, as anybody who follows him on Facebook knows. So, and they're not copyrighted. They're all pictures.
Yeah, and Rich, if we get any some bigger name guys in MMA, we can put a little post on the Underground.
And get a little
pre-interview publicity.
Once these videos start to get really a lot of hits, then we can start saying, all right, well, not only do you get an advertisement on our website, but we'll put in our videos for extra stuff like that. So try to build on some stuff. And we'll move on from there. Like I said, there's some birthdays this month of some fighters. Vitor Belfort, actually, it's not an April Fool's joke. He was 38, just turned 38 yesterday. April Fool's Day. Vitor Belfort. Same age as me. I cannot believe it. I demand a DNA test. I said Stephen Bonner also on April 4th. Marcus Brimage turns 30 on April 6th. Tank Abbott's birthday this month, April 26th. Guess how old he is?
I'll tell you, he'll be 50. He'll be 50.
Ivo, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and talk about freak show fights, hey. Well, why not get him into the Bellator cage?
Someone was talking about, like, Tyson Fury. What he would need would be a stand-up guy like Kimbo. That would be we'll talk about a freak show fight there.
I don't want to insult our former guest, but Billy Wright. Get Bronco Billy Wright in there, I guess. Tank Evans, both the same age. Great.
Yep.
Martin Campman will be 33 on April 17th. Tyron Woodley also turns 33 the same day. See, we got Pascal Krause, 28, turns 28 on April 19th. Tyson Griffin, another Tyson, turns 31 on April 20th. Let's see. DJ Waldberger is 27 on April 25th. As I said, Tank Abbott, 50 on April 26th. Carlos Condit, also 31 on April 26th, along with Cole Miller, same age, same day. They're brothers from another mother, I guess. 31 years old, each the same day. Let's see. Dustin Hazlett, 29, on April 29th.
He hasn't fought in quite some time. I wonder what the deal is with him.
I don't know.
Yeah, he fought a guy that I trained with, and that was back in the King of the Cage back in 2004, and Dustin's grappling skills were incredible back then. But, boy, he just seemed to fade off the radar screen. Huh.
Right.
It's interesting.
Well, that's about it for our weekly news and breaking stuff that I know of. We do have a lot of event-related stuff to cover. The number one story, I think, of the past week for me, event-related, would be Joe Warren versus Marcus Galvo, the main event of the latest Bellator show. And the verbal submission that wasn't a verbal submission, but technically is.
Well, my comment on that, I don't know what the rules are. I never heard that rule before, that if you scream, that's a submission. And I don't know if that's something new. And I'd have to think that they go over that in the fighters' meeting, because that didn't seem right.
No. Well, our former guest, Jimmy Smith, there outlined it for the fans who are watching and said like six times that John McCarthy, every meeting he's ever seen him explain the rules to fighters, has always said, whether you scream out involuntarily or voluntarily, I will consider that a submission. So whether that's...
Okay, but is that the rules, or is that McCarthy saying that those are the rules? Is this a McCarthy thing? Or are those the actual state commission rules? I never heard of anything like this.
That's a good question, and I really didn't see any articles written about that subject, or notice any major protests by Warren's camp, other than his verbal saying, "That's my belt."
I'm kind of questioning McCarthy. I just, for the first time this week, seen Stuhlgate. And you remember that with Romero and Tim Kennedy. And McCarthy was the referee of that fiasco. Now, what should have happened is Romero should have had at least a point deducted, maybe two, and a scream session to the corner that if this happens one more time, he's disqualified. That was pathetic, what happened. It's absolutely pathetic. And McCarthy, you think, I don't know, maybe he's slipping. So he just said, well, if you scream, I'm stopping the fight because I said so.
Yeah, basically.
Well, we got a Mazzagatti situation there, like with Brock Lesnar that time.
Injuries, because you're doing that, that's one thing. But, we don't know how close he was to an injury at that point. We don't know whether, that was going to lead to a tap eventually because he had it that good.
Well, then you give him a chance. You give him a chance, right? McCarthy's an experienced jiu-jitsu guy, and sometimes if you get caught in something quick, it just happens. That there's an involuntary, I've done it, for sure. Arm bars are painful. But that doesn't mean that, you at least give the guy a chance to try to reverse or change his position or something.
Yeah. Yeah, what about people like tennis players who grunt? that's a disqualification. You're done.
I'm a doctor, and I do that with every punch I throw.
You remember a fighter named Troy Dorsey. Remember him? Remember Troy Dorsey?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, he used to yell. He used to yell quite a bit.
You're like a man
down. I remember that.
Wait, I think I have to look at this. I wouldn't be surprised if they do a formal process to make this a no contest, but it's kind of interesting that this whole thing happened to a guy who was known for having a controversial decision in the previous fight over Calvo. I thought he was winning this time, too. So there you have reversal of fortune. So I definitely think these guys are going to have a rematch to settle it, whether this becomes final or not. I don't think it matters all that much. It's not like Warren was undefeated before this. You know, he had three losses before this. So, you know, obviously he's pissed. Obviously he wants a chance for his belt back, but I doubt it'll be reversed. You know, because you could legitimately make the argument that he didn't yell out in a manner that makes you think he's hurting. You know, wasn't just a regular grunt. So, I mean, I kind of see where McCarthy is coming from, but I definitely think they need to take another look at this and make sure that this is actual rules and not, like Tom said, McCarthy making shit up.
I'm just still smoking about that whole Stoolgate thing. You know, so I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little harsh on Big John because I mean I've always thought he's, I mean he's been the man since UFC 2, and I've always thought he's done a great job. But I mean there was only one serious mistake he made, and that was the first time the UFC went to Japan, and Sakuraba was fighting Conan. And Big John admitted that it was a long call, so they had an immediate rematch the same day. And Sakuraba armbarred him. So, because Conan had won the first one, but then they called it a no contest. But aside from that, that's really the only serious screw-up I remember from Big John, which is an incredible record when you consider the referee has a split second. I don't like to be critical of him at all. I mean, that's a tough job.
Exactly. Some of the other fights on the Bellator card, Elsie Davis beat Hideo Tokoro by split decision. Francis Carmont beat Guilherme Viana by unanimous decision. Ryan Couture, former interview subject of mine, beat Dakota Cochran by rear naked choke in the first round. Cochran actually retired today, I think, officially, so it's all fun. Rashad Coulter beat Jeremiah O'Neill, first round TKO. Manuel Sanchez beat Alejandro Villalobos by unanimous decision. Sean Holden beat Tim Roman by unanimous decision. Neil Ewing beat Logan Nail, same way. And Steven Banaszak beat Brad Mitchell by omoplata submission in the second round. Clayton Mai beat Xavier Siller by neck crank submission in the first round. And the first fight, George Papariou beat Ivan Cole by scarf-hold arm lock. Whatever the fuck that is.
You know, maybe everyone has given up on even defending against an omoplata because it's so hard to put on. I can't believe we're seeing it make a comeback. I mean, it's that old cliche of man lives long enough, he sees everything come back around again. But, you know, back to that LC fight against the Japanese fighter, I thought that was very entertaining. And seems like these Japanese guys just can't get a break. I mean, I'm not saying he won the fight. I have no complaint about it, but it just seems like they really can't get a break when they come to America, you know?
I really could not figure out for the life of me how they made that fight the co-main event. I mean, I didn't understand that whole concept because I was watching that fight and I was bored to tears. And I couldn't stay watching it. I just kept looking over at it every now and then.
You didn't find it entertaining? Really?
It was a technical, don't get me wrong. I thought it was a real back and forth the moments I did watch, but I just, maybe it's something with the lighter weight guy. Sometimes I just cannot get into it. It just does not seem that exciting to me.
I love the submission escapes by the Japanese fighter. I love that. I mean, he was sharp. He had some great reversals.
Right. Right. It was probably like a technical fighter's favorite fight to watch, you know, but I guess I'm just not that into the different stuff that I haven't even trained in yet. So, doesn't really.
So you're one of those rock 'em, sock 'em robot guys in the bar.
Yeah.
I like that too.
Either. You know, I don't like to see sloppy stand up either. I like to see more technical striking.
Oh, I know. I'm just joking, buddy.
We're going to get to the UFC fights coming up, Mendez versus Lamez, coming up April 4th as well, Saturday from Virginia. Chad Mendez versus Ricardo Lamas in the main event there. We'll go over those in a minute, but I want to get back to some boxing. We talked a little bit earlier about Friday Night Fights going out of business, going with Premier Boxing Champions and Al Heyman for the summer, but they're not done yet. They have some shit to flush out before that. One of their big events is coming up tomorrow night from Corona, California. We've got Peter Petrov, 35-4-2 as a lightweight, fighting a 10-rounder against Gamaliel Diaz, who's 38-11-3 with 17 knockouts. We also have an 8-round welterweight co-main event, Taras Shalestiak, who is 11-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Juan Rodriguez Jr., who's 12-1 with 5 knockouts. And a 6-round fight between Emmanuel Robles, who's 12-0-1 with 3 knockouts, and Wilbur Lopez, who's 5-4 with 1 knockout. And let's see. Oh, we've got a lot more fights this weekend. The big one, of course, CBS. Coming from Canada, too. This is even the United States card. This is Quebec, Canada, from the Pepsi Coliseum. Of course, Donna Stevenson is from Canada. He is 25-1 with 21 knockouts. In the main event, he is fighting Sakio Pika, who is 32-6-3 with 21 knockouts. So both of them have 21 knockouts. This is for the WBC World Light Heavyweight title. And this is obviously a fight that could set up a Kovalev fight. Stevenson,
yes,
Kovalev.
Yes.
Stevenson does not lose.
Pika is a tough fight for anybody because he's so strong and he's so awkward and he's, you know, so physical. But he's awkward and his fighting style is like an octopus almost, a very physical octopus, and he's strong. But it's like he's not aesthetically pleasing to watch because you get a lot of clinches, you get a lot of roughhouse tactics. But he's tough. He's got just a good chin, and you really can't back him up. Stevenson should beat him. I mean, he could lose him some weight. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I really don't enjoy watching Sakio Pika fights. And every time you see him fight, it's like, you know, I'd rather go watch, you know, two drunk hockey players play each other. That's what makes me look like.
Jeez, Tony, that's pretty, man, you're pretty strict tonight. High standards here, bud.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Boy.
Anyway, Stevenson, obviously, famous now for making the move to avoid fighting Kovalev. So I think this is going to be a defining fight. If he really doesn't take Sakio out earlier, look impressive, and then they throw him in with Kovalev, who's got a happy birthday today. It could be ugly for Stevenson. I really think tactically he's trying to avoid that fight no matter what. So, I don't know if he's going to go as far as lose to Pika to avoid it.
Wow, yeah, that's a thought. But, well, let's hope that that the fans clamoring will bring it about. I mean, ultimately, maybe it'll come down to that.
And there's plenty of other great fights on this card. We've got another 12-rounder, light heavyweights, Arthur Beterbiev, who's 7-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Gabe Campillo, who's 25-6-1 with 12 knockouts. And we have one 10-rounder and two 8-rounders on this card as well. 10 rounds, Julian Williams at super welterweight, 18-0-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting Joey Hernandez, who's 24-2 with 1 draw and 14 knockout wins. And we got the two welterweights, actually one welterweight and one heavyweight 8-rounder. Kevin Bizier in the welterweights, fight 23-2 with 16 knockouts, fighting Fuad Al-Masudi, who's 12-4 with 1 knockout win. I think we all know who the busier fighter is going to be in that one. Then we got heavyweight Oscar Rivas, 15-0, with Ken Knockouts, fighting Ozcan Satinkia, I guess. 21-9-2 with 14 knockouts. That's about it for that card. Let's see what else we got going on. We got to go to page 2. Saturday. That fight is Saturday, by the way. That was kind of one of the questions I had, too, when I was reading the top rank story. I thought some of these Premier Boxing Champions cards are going to be on Friday, even though ESPN's getting out of Friday Night Fight stuff. So I was kind of puzzled when I read that they're trying to do this. I'm like, well, you know, why are you counter-programming your own sport? Well, it makes sense to me. But maybe they're going to move to Saturdays. I don't know. This one's on Saturday. It's on CBS. Anyway. Just waiting for Box Rec. While we're waiting, let's just run through a couple of these fights on the UFC roster here for Saturday from Virginia. We have Chad Mendes, as I mentioned, versus Ricardo Lamas in the main event. Mendes has just 2 losses. Lamas has just 3. Mendes has 16 wins. Ricardo Lamas has 15. So this is obviously on paper a perfect match to set up. I don't know if they have any history against each other. I don't know a whole lot about either fighter, except you know, I have seen them both fight, and they're very lean and mean type of fighters. They have good technique, and it just happens their losses have been against top ranked guys.
Right, and I think the tactics are going to come down to if Lamas can keep the distance. Mendes is not really a great kicker. Now, maybe with Marvin Kampman, he's been working on that. But if Lamas can keep a distance on the feet, that should give him a slight edge. And on the ground, Mendes is definitely the better wrestler. And Mendes is pretty much impossible to take down. But Lamas is a little better with submission. So this is a flip-em fight. My gut feeling says Mendes might have a slight edge, but oh, this is good matchmaking.
Yeah, and, both of these guys, I think, have already had title shots, right?
Right. And went the distance.
So it's going to be here, it's kind of bragging rights. Probably not.
Well, Mendes, I take it back. The first time Mendes fought Aldo, he didn't go the distance. He was knocked out at the end of the first round. I'm sorry, but the second time it went the distance, and Lamasel went the distance also. So, I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be one worth watching, but it's not just that fight. I mean, this is a really packed card for, April is really a huge month. In general, but this is a really a lot of great fights, a lot of great personalities on this card. They really thought this one out. You got a couple guys from the same episode of The Ultimate Fighter fighting in the next 2 fights here. Al Iaquinta versus Jorge Masvidal. Iaquinta, as I just mentioned, birthday coming up. Iaquinta is 11-3-1. He's fighting Masvidal, who's 28-8. Didn't Iaquinta just have a fight?
And he just beat Joe Lozon, if you remember, not too far back. Oh. And he's definitely on a hot streak. I'm sorry, what?
Who just knocked out Ross Pearson?
He did that also. Yeah, now I don't know if that was before the Lozon fight or after, but he's been on a tear. But Jorge has just always seem to rise to the occasion, and I don't know. I mean, I hate to go against Al, but I don't know. My gut feeling's leaning toward Jorge a little bit in that one. But again, these are so close. It's pretty pathetic here. My crystal ball normally shines real bright here. You know, I got to live up to my nickname, and I'm pretty shaky in my predictions. You know, since it changed my name here.
This one, the next one, I mean, the matchmaker really didn't have to work too hard to figure this one out. Both of them are 11-2. Michael Chiesa versus Mitch Clark here. Chiesa won that episode of that season of The Ultimate Fighter, but he's kind of had mixed results in the UFC. He's won a couple, lost a couple. It's been a little back and forth, but, you know, I'm a big fan of his style. He definitely, he learned a lot on the show. He looked like he was going places, and then he just kind of had a couple stumbles.
Against Jorge in his hometown, if you remember that. And that
right.
had to be devastating because he was undefeated going into that. And, you know, Teddy Atlas has that great phrase, he doesn't know how to lose. Well, for an undefeated fighter, and then once that happens, I think it can either make you better or make you a lot worse. So.
Yeah, he had a hell of a story with his dad dying while he was on the show and that stuff. And, you know, so he had a lot of people rooting for him the way he handled that. So I'm definitely still a big fan of his. I'd like to see him beat Mitch Clark. I really don't even know who the hell Mitch Clark is, to be honest with you. I don't think I've seen him fight, and if I have, I've forgotten about it. So what does that say? But anyway, I'm sure it'll be a good fight based on their records alone on paper. But we've got what looks like a great female fight between Juliana Pena, 5-2, coming back from major knee surgery, and she's fighting Melina Dudieva, who's 11-3, and she's also an Ultimate Fighter winner. So Pena is, I mean. So,
Pena's really calling out Ronda already. I heard an interview with her, and she says, well, I don't mean to be looking past this next fight, but down the road, yeah, she said that if Beth Correa, the Brazilian gal, with her record, if she was able to talk her way into a title shot, Juliana thinks she'll get that someday, too.
Well, Dudieva here at 11-3 is a pretty formidable opponent for her, so
right.
We'll see how she, especially being on the show for so long.
Right.
I'm waiting for this to see, you know, if she can live up to her potential, but she's mean. I mean, if anybody can do it with a couple years of training and a few more fights against some top-level competition, if she can start finishing people in the first round pretty easily, you know, just, who knows? We could have a tough fight between her and Rousey. But somebody's got to give her a tough fight, you know, or she's going to go to the WWE, right?
Cyborg. I'm sounding like a parrot now.
You're going to be hearing The Rock, and the Ronda cooking in the kitchen for the WWE here. Pretty soon, if we don't get some competition for her. But I thought, actually, going back to that discussion, I thought a great nickname for Rousey in the UFC would be Miss Perfect, now that Mr. Perfect's long gone and dead. Miss Perfect. So you could do it. Miss Perfect and The Rock. Or Ms. Perfect. So you got to use the Z. You know, they already had the Ms, right?
They already got the Ms.
Uh-oh. Also on this UFC card, we got Clay Guida fighting Robbie Peralta. Guida is 31-15. Peralta is 18-5. I'm just amazed that Guida is still doing it and still draws a lot of fan.
Exactly. Yeah.
The toughest camp around. So, I mean, talk about a character. I think almost more than his fighting, his character has sealed his career. He's just a likable guy. I mean, he seems like a really cool hippie type. I really didn't think he does any drugs. It just seems like he's on that higher plane of understanding somehow. From doing other shit.
It's a natural wild man. Yeah, he's entertaining.
And he's quite the nomad, too. He goes everywhere in a camper, from what I understand. But also we have Dustin Poirier, who's 16-4, fighting Carlos Diego Ferreira, another Ultimate Fighter guy from Brazil. He's 11-1, Ferreira. Lauren Murphy, another female fight. She's 8-1, fighting Liz Carmouche, who's 9-5. As Tom mentioned earlier, Gray Maynard is back. He's 11-4-1, fighting Alexander Yakovlev, who's 21-6-1.
Yeah, Rich, I definitely want you to read that story about Gray, how he really got off track, or I guess Extreme Couture, the character of the gym changed. And I didn't know that for Gray's second fight with Frankie Edgar, he rented out his own little small gym, I guess, and was kind of training himself. So, I mean, and then he was, he never was really an AKA guy, and then he tried the power of MMA in Arizona, and so now he's back, and he feels it's a very good team back there. He said that the problem was he had single-discipline guys trying to teach MMA, but now he feels he has a coach that's going to put it together for him. So we'll see, but he's got to pull this off. I mean, I really, he's got to shine. Another first-round knockout here I think will be the end of him. And I hope that doesn't happen. I really hope that doesn't happen. He's a great guy. But the fight business is brutal, as we know.
Has a lot more experience, but I don't think it's UFC-level experience, so Maynard has him up on that, a leg up on him there, but definitely going to be a competitive fight there for the preliminaries. We also got Timothy Johnson fighting Shamil Abdurakhimov. Probably butchering that, but he's two. And first fight is Justin Jones versus Ron Stallings. Stallings is 12-7. Justin Jones is 3. And our boy Chris Hunterman, Ron, his opportunity in the Octagon didn't grow quite as a land as home to, I should say. But here's another shot for him. So good luck. Let's get back to boxing here. I'm on computer. Yeah, for some reason my computer is frozen here, so. What else can we talk about, guys?
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to say, and I forgot to say it earlier. Good point that Tom had made earlier in the show when we were talking about, and I hate to harp back on it, events and water cooler talk. Since this fight really got signed, about a month or so ago, maybe 2 months now almost, or 6 weeks. The anticipation of the last 6 years has been building. And I know when I started my job almost 2 years ago, and we were having orientation in Tennessee City, Philadelphia, and that day we had to meet somebody. Now, we were all going to be working in the same building. There was three different buildings. Out of 40 people in orientation, only six people were going to be going to my office in Fort Washington. And it's funny that the girl that I happen to be sitting next to, and we kind of did the introducing, and I introduce you, you introduce me kind of thing, happens to be somebody that not only is working in my office, but now we're working in the same department, and we sit 3 feet from each other every day. But she got up and, to talk, and she goes, "Hey, this is Tony, he's blah, 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 blah." And, he's a former boxing competitor, and he does like a radio show on boxing, and he coaches people for fun. So one of the guys that was in that meeting, we were all having lunch together that day, and he's like, "Wow, man, you're really into boxing. Did you do a radio show? What's your radio address?" So I'm talking about it, and the first thing he asked me, it was in 2013, "Is Canelo got a shot against Floyd?" Basically, right there, what a cool talk. Because it's a person that I'm just meeting that day. I just really introduced myself a matter of minutes prior, and that's the first question he asked me. Did Canelo got a shot to beat Floyd? Because he's a boxing fan. Like, now, we were sitting kind of across from each other when we had gotten to the new office, and he worked a night shift that was a lot slower. He had brought in the Kaizen book that came out a couple of years ago, and he would read part of that every night, and he finished all 500-600 pages of it. But you're right, what are we talking? I mean, he was interested. Now, I'm sitting at lunch today, and there's a guy who works in a different department. I don't get to see him very often. Happened to be walking through the cafeteria when I was in there, And he stopped and he walked by me and he says, "Man, what do you think about it?" He goes, "Are you excited or what?" And I'm like, "Oh, hell yeah, dude. I get to, I was doing Easter flowers last night, like I'm going to be doing again tomorrow and then the rest of the weekend." So when I got there last night, I'm talking to the two owners that I know very well, not realizing what yesterday was. And the one owner says to me, he goes, "Yo, listen, a friend of mine backed out. And I got an extra ticket paid for the flight. All you got to do is pay for your flight." And my jaw hit the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, my jaw hit the ground. So I realized what yesterday was.
That's cold. Oh, no, man.
I took that one hook, line, sinker, and the pole.
Oh, that is brutal. Oh, man.
That was awesome. But you're right. What a cool talk. And then he and I were talking about guys like Sugar Ray Leonard, Thomas Hearns, you know, Roberto Duran, you know, guys from back in the early, you know, late 70s, early 80s. We had a long talk about it last night. I'm thinking of the one guy that I have lunch with almost every day at work. He's a big boxing fan. And as soon as he sits down, we start talking. And I enjoy talking to him because he's very knowledgeable. Now, he's a big Floyd fan. He's a little bit more of a Floyd, supporter than realist, to be honest. Because in his mind, he's like, the only guy I see in history beating Floyd is Sugar Ray Robinson. And I'm sort of thinking, no.
Well, thank you.
Now, I'm going to take Hagler out of the equation, out of the Fab Four, because I think Hagler was too big.
Right.
The other three guys in the Fab Four, I think, all beat him, and handily. That being Duran, Leonard, and Hearns.
I would agree.
Well,
because they all had the style.
Henry Armstrong's out there, great fighters in those lower weight classes that I think, you know, you would have taken it to them. But, you know, we were just talking about that. And you're right. It's like, and now especially when people see me now because they know my involvement in it, it's like almost like they're tapping like a guy on the inside. Now, am I on the inside? No, I'm a fan. You know, now, do I get privy what more people get? Oh, absolutely, especially doing the show now and especially being, you know, a former competitor. Yeah, I'm in that fraternity, but I'm not privy to anything special. You know, I just research it more. And I'll tell you what was also funny last night, is I'm working with the two guys. So the one guy, a very good friend of mine, I've known him for years. The other guy, I've known him for a long time. I really didn't start talking to him a lot until 2 years ago. And so we were talking about a fighter from Norristown, Pennsylvania, which is actually right down the street from where I'm doing the Easter flowers.
Wow.
And he was like, it was a big heavyweight from Norristown. And he was really good, but he never panned out. I'm like, yeah, Michael Grant. That's it, Michael Grant. Yeah, I said, yeah, friends of mine met him at a cheesecake place like 10 years ago, and they got him to sign a menu for me. Yeah, Michael Grant. I went to one of his fights. He's fighting that big Polish guy. I said, Andrew Galata. Yeah, that's right, Galata, that's right. And I'm like, yeah, Grant was down twice. He got up and knocked Galata out. And he's like, yeah, you're right. He goes, man, there was another fight on the undercard. I said, you're right, it was two lightweights. He's like, yeah, and the one guy, and he like kind of staggered on it. I'm like, yeah, he passed away after that fight. He's like, oh, my God, you remember that? I'm like, of course I do. And then the other guy, Danny, steps in and goes, Dave, you know what this guy does for a hobby? He hosts a boxing talk show. I'm like, yeah, Dave, they call me Rain Man because I know too much shit that I just remember.
Yes, we do. Anyway, let me just jump through a couple more boxing matches coming up this weekend. We got a big one in Mexico on Saturday. Carlos Cuadras, he's 31-0-1 with 25 knockouts, fighting for the WBC World Super Flyweight title against Luis Concepcion. 32-3 with 23 knockouts. And then we go all the way to Tuesday. So we waited all the time to find out. There's only two fights to talk about. Go all the way to Tuesday, and listen to this one. This is mismatch of the century, not just the week. There's our 90-second warning. Let me get to Tuesday here. Tuesday from Bangkok, Thailand. Of course, where else would a mismatch match of the century come from.
Yeah.
It's actually my lucky number day, April 7th. That's 47. 47 is my lucky number. So this is the main event. It's the only fight on the card, of course. Sirimonkol Singwanchul. His record is 83-2 with 54 knockouts as a super welterweight. He's fighting a 12-round fight, nonetheless, against, get this, Dan Nazareno Jr., who is 21-12. It's not so bad. There is actually a worse one. Okay.
Wow.
I thought that was the worst one. There's another one here. Where is that? There it is. Oh, the mismatch of the century is from Brazil. Sorry. That's just a mismatch of the week. Mismatch of the century is from Brazil. And let's see who we got here. Giovanni Andrade, or Andrade again. He is 66-13 with 54 knockouts. He's fighting Luis Alberto Maidana. M-A-Y-D-A-N-A, not M-A-I. Maidana, like the monk. And Maidana's record is 6-6-1. 6-6-1 with 3 knockout losses and 3 knockout wins against 54 knockout wins. Good luck. That's the main event. The bantamweight. 12, another 12-rounder from Sao Paulo, Brazil. So, Maidana, if you believe in prayer, you're going to be praying for him. But we're at overtime now. That's pretty much all I had. Unless you guys have anything else to mention. I'm sure I forgot something, of course. But, you know.
Well, all I can say is what I always say. Saturday, we got lots of action. So let's enjoy the fight.
Oh. Now I do.
Lots to talk about next week.
I did mention to you guys in email that we were trying to hook up a couple interesting guests. One I told you about already was Mark Miro. I was trying to do an anti-bullying campaign. And, you know, he's a retired professional wrestler, so lots to talk about there, I'm sure. If we can get him, I'm trying to get him for next week. And then also working on Phil Baroni, the New York badass.
That'll be fun. All right, guys, let's enjoy the fights this weekend. Lots of them. Over and out.
Adios.